So this is something that when you talk about addressing it in the present, what that looks like is it's not saying let's change the whole commission structure. It could be, but it could also be that how do I reconcile what I'm selling right now with what my present state capability is? Because a lot of companies get in trouble by trying to sell capability that they keep thinking they're going to have in the future. And that is a game you can never win. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 47 of Business Therapy, the show where every week, Jonathan and I meet with live professionals looking to get mindful advice on their business problems. Today on the show, we have John Fiala. Hey, John. Welcome to the show.
How are you guys doing? Oh, thanks for having me.
Great. So why don't we start the show by you telling us a little bit more about yourself and then your business and the challenge you wanted to talk about today?
Yeah. So my name is John Fiala, and I'm the founder of Pearl. Pearl is an infrastructure partner for some of the largest tutoring programs going on in the country that are really focused on mitigating the learning loss that COVID-19 caused. So at Pearl, you know, we don't bring tutors, we don't bring content. What we do is we bring the technical infrastructure that states, districts, and private tutoring companies need to really scale their business in a meaningful way, collect the data points that are most important to their students' academic outcomes, and help prove the efficacy of the work they're Pearl didn't start here, as you know, very few startup stories do. We actually started as an in-person tutoring company that I started senior year at University of Richmond, decided to pursue that instead of becoming a banker, grew the in-person instruction, knew we had to build a platform around 2018. So we did. With that platform, we scaled. Then in 2019, saw the bigger need for the infrastructure play in the industry as opposed to another tutoring company. So that's when we pivoted, focused much more on licensing the software. And ever since then, we've really just been focused on supporting the state, district, and private tutoring initiatives so that they can focus on the relationships and we can focus on the tech. So as you can imagine, being in the tutoring, especially online education space with everything that happened with COVID, there is a much greater demand today for a service that we provide than there was in the past. So we've gone through some pretty interesting growth phases over the last 2 years. It started when COVID first hit and the lockdowns came. We have an online classroom in our platform. It did about 17,000 minutes of instruction in February of 2020, 50,000 minutes in March, 100,000 minutes in April, and then 160,000 minutes in May of 2020. So that was the first time when we really started to realize like, okay, we may be going through some aggressive growth periods as a company. If we were to fast forward to when the summer of 2021 came around, you know, at that point, we were working with freelance tutors, small tutoring companies, focused very much on, you know, a hands-off, have them start a free trial, have them convert from the trial and then start using and really focus on like MRR and that credit card getting dinged every month. In the summer of 2021, when their American Rescue Plan was announced, billions of dollars from public, private, and even philanthropic sources started entering the tutoring space because tutoring was the number one evidence-based way to mitigate the learning loss that took place. So it was an interesting day in August 2021 where I went from talking to a freelance tutor trying to convince them to get on the platform to talking to the state of Illinois, who was launching the Illinois Tutoring Initiative, who also needed a system and had a slightly larger budget to purchase that system. So around September 2021, we really started focusing on the larger side of the industry. And we only started with two of these enterprise clients. So we had a small team, but a mighty team. And the sales cycle had started to shift with freelancers. It was, how can we get someone to buy without talking to them or buy within 1 week? And then all of a sudden we got into these more educational institutions, these larger groups where the sales cycle on average is closer to 2 years, but we were just starting off those like first month or two. So throughout the last academic school year, you know, we did a great job supporting our existing clients and felt like we were in a pretty good space to support our clients, their users as everyone grew. The sales team though caught a little fire this past summer where, you know, more reports about learning loss came out, more states wanted to bring their programs in-house, more universities wanted to launch tutoring programs with local districts so that university students can support local middle school and elementary school students. And we were fortunately positioned and had a lot of great relationships where we were the go-to choice for these groups. So the interesting thing about education is that no one will launch an educational tool in the middle of a semester. because they want to focus on launching the semester in the beginning, managing the semester, and then winding it down. So for Pearl, a product like Pearl, we have drastic spikes in adoption periods where everybody wants to onboard in August and September, or everybody wants to onboard in December and January to get ready for those upcoming semesters. So a very fortunate problem we've had this semester and are currently still navigating is the problem where our sales team outsold our customer care department. And we didn't necessarily have the operational practices in place over the summer to make it very clear about how many groups customer care can bring on at a time. And we were also in the process of growing that customer care department, hiring another individual to work there. And then another fun variable here is customer care was going to be onboarding users to a product that wasn't even fully built yet, because we were building a lot of it or finishing a lot of it over the summer. So we found ourselves in a position where customer care had their hands more than full, because they were onboarding internal team members, creating new training programs and new onboarding programs for a product that they had to use Figma mockups to figure out how are they going to do onboarding. And then also be put in the position where they were already onboarding over capacity and had even more deals that were looking to sign and looking to get going within 2 to 4 weeks. So, you know, once again, very fortunate problem to have as a business, but it's a big one that we've been dealing with. And it's one that if we don't find a long-term solution in addition to the short-term solution, we will constantly find ourselves here. And because of that sales cycle, you know, we don't necessarily push a deal 1 month. We need to push a deal close to like 4 months or 5 months if we can't onboard them in that period. Because once again, no one's going to onboard in October when their programs already need to be up and running. So from a long-term perspective, we need to figure out a great solution for this, because our contracts too see great growth year over year. But if that first period gets delayed 6 months, then all of a sudden the value of that contract, everything gets pushed down the roadmap 6 months, which is, you know, the urgency inside of me doesn't necessarily love when we start to see that happen. So that's kind of the position we're in. Excited to talk to you all about it and see what insights or opportunities you think may be presented here.
Yeah. Awesome.
First off, that's a great story. And, you know, the percentage of startups that would love to be asking your problem with all the great things that have happened to you along the way, you know, are pretty high. So for everyone listening, this is a great, you know, this is what can happen when you open yourself up to the possibilities. So great job.
Yeah, thank you.
You had just one point of clarification. You had mentioned a 2-year cycle of some sort. Is that like earlier on, you had mentioned something about 2 years.
Yeah, so the traditional sales cycle into public schools or public educational institutions is, you know, anywhere from 14 to 22 months. If you're working in higher ed, it's much closer to that 22-month side. So pretty much the larger the organization, the longer it takes for you to sell them. Because like, for example, state of Illinois, they now need to roll this thing out across 100 districts. So that's not a decision they can make too quickly or too, you know, without really getting buy-in from all these stakeholders. So that was part of what led to this like moment where, you know, we didn't close the deal in like February, because once again, no one buys in February. But then we started closing all of these deals towards the end of the academic year, which in academics, you know, July 1 to June 30 tends to be the fiscal year. So we had a lot of groups who still had some money on their books, wanted to get it off, or wanted to get money off the books once that new fiscal year hit. So it kind of led to a perfect storm of all the people we've been talking to for 12 months saying yes, and us not having the customer care resources in place yet, because we didn't feel like it was necessarily a bet we wanted to make scaling up customer care before scaling up sales. Because we've done that in the past when we were working with freelancers. We're like, oh, sales is going to work. Let's just get the support team ready to go. And then when the sales don't come, you have a bloated support team, a lot of payroll, and you're like, yeah, this isn't a great spot to be in. So, you know, once again, much rather this situation than the one we had that last time. But that's just another variable here, the sales cycle. And some deals, if you push off, you're pushing them 6 months down the line, and a lot can happen in 6 months. But on the more private tutoring company side, you know, those are ones you can normally manage to like push a month or so off, because especially the companies going B2C and just dealing with parents, the school cycle somewhat isn't as pertinent or as relevant to them anymore.
And it could even come up during the school year. So
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And what are the elements of onboarding? Like what goes in? So that's where you're getting jammed up. What's involved?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I loved when we were more of that SMB SaaS platform was we had one system. It worked the way it worked. You signed on and you used it however you needed to use it. Now that we are more in the enterprise game, we are highly focused on creating a very configurable platform that can facilitate any form of tutoring instruction, because we don't believe that today we are the tutoring experts. So a lot of tutoring companies, when they go and work with the district, they say, hey, this is the tutoring program you're getting, take it or leave it. A lot of the districts though want to create customized tutoring programs, maybe a little homework help plus high impact tutoring. So what this all gets to is when we close a deal, one, there's a lot of knowledge transfer that needs to take place between the sales and the customer care department, because sales has been the one who's been talking to them, demoing them, talking through workflows and identifying how all of that works. After there's the communication, the first step is then configuration. We need to go into the back end of the platform, create their instance in the system, configure it in the specific way they need. So great example, cancellation policies. If you cancel a session before 12 hours, like 12 hours leading up to it, does that credit still get taken away from the family or from the school, or does that credit not? So there's a big configuration period, which is technical and very dependent on the information that was shared from the sales team. There's then the like kickoff call where we really walk through one, how the system's configured, but then two, how the administrator, instructor, and student rollout is going to go. After that kickoff call, we normally have about three training sessions. We do an administrative training. We do a train the trainer training. So, you know, give us a team member. We'll train them on how to onboard and train instructors into the system, because we would need a team of 100 people to just train tutors if we took that fully on ourselves. And then the third one, you know, is the wild card training, we call it, for lack of a better term, where they can kind of hold on to it. They can choose to use it on the admin side. They can use it on the tutor side. Or if they need help, you know, bidding on and winning a deal, they can also use that training to kind of have us come in, look at the RFP they're writing, the proposal they're writing, and help them be successful there.
And how many of these have you gone through? How many cycles like this?
August 2021 was when the American Rescue Plan appeared. So we are approximately 1 year into this right now.
Okay.
And to give you an idea, we're expecting at least 5x growth from a usage perspective this fall. And that's with us pushing off a few deals and, you know, discounting the numbers that a lot of our partners are giving us. So to say the least, we're learning while we're going here.
Well, this is very fresh. So it shouldn't be scalable at this stage. I mean, just to give we'll give some advice, but now's not the time. You wouldn't start from a place of scalability. You'd start from, you know, delivering the value to your customers, and you're obviously very focused on that. And that you're, again, leagues ahead of most entities in thinking of this.
Yeah. And, you know, we're very much today, we're looking at it as all hands on deck. It's like, hey, fundamentally as a company, we have, you know, a belief that everyone's a janitor. If I need a mop, I'm picking up the mop and mop it. If I need my head of sales to go do a tutor training, no questions asked, they're going to do a tutor training. So that culture definitely helps, but it's not sustainable, and it's difficult when, you know, I need to onboard a client on Monday and then immediately jump into an investment conversation right afterwards. So, so any advice, suggestions, support here is greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
One more question. Sorry.
Yeah.
The distinction between customer care and sales, those departments grew prior to this cycle coming up, or these were your groups for the B2C entity?
So the sales team for the most part was always here. We brought on a VP of sales in March. Cause that's when I was feeling a little anxiety of like, are we going to get these deals across the line or do we just talk to someone for the last 12 months? But for the most part, the sales team's been intact. On the customer care side, we had two team members plus a third party for ticket support. We had them back since, for the most part, like November, and they were with us. And then one of the team members ended up leaving in June, and that was right as some of the deals were getting closed. So customer care was then looking one human down, needing to bring another one on, and then also figure out this new training program and then actually do the implementations.
Yeah.
So I just want to give Sam an opportunity before I...
This is the fun part where there's a log jam because there's so much interesting stuff coming into the picture, and now we need to address multiple dimensions simultaneously. But I'll start by... I want to reinforce a point that Jonathan said because I think it will be a central theme of this conversation going forward, which is there are two things happening simultaneously. There is a pressure to scale a process that itself is not standard or like cemented yet. So we've got to have a careful delineation between two separate issues there, which is we have to be very careful about allowing a process to be able to stabilize because you can't scale something that's amorphous. And there is a way to do both simultaneously, but without that firm line in your mind and being able to say, hey team, there's got to be creativity and adaptability in the moment for this process. And then we have to watch carefully that we're not scaling something that's still in motion. Those are two separate things that need to be managed. So I do think calling just some energy to that and some focus on that is going to help structure the conversation from this point. But the question I have, just as we're still kind of poking around in what you're feeling and doing, it's a multifaceted problem and like a multifaceted positive problem, as we discussed, where you've got a lot of good clients coming in. They're big clients. You're kind of putting your foot forward before everything's stable, and you also need to have more of whatever it is at the same time. So in honing in on what you're feeling right now, what is the thing that keeps you up at night? So I want to focus in more on, because there's a lot of different things we could intellectualize in this problem, but where are you feeling the most distress as a founder? Because obviously with all these things going on, wanting to do customer service, wanting to do all these things, like where are you feeling you'd get the most resolution from? Understanding your processes better, ensuring customer success for the clients that you're working with now, like what's keeping you up at night? Where's the bad feeling coming from in all this?
Yeah. And you know, my dad always told me it's better to do one thing at 100% than five things at 20%. And my concern is around diluting the success of the partners coming onto the platform in the fall, because we're trying to just bring too many of them on and we're not giving them the time and attention each one needs. Like as an example, one of our sales members is onboarding a group this week. And he walked me through the onboarding and it was significantly better than I had been expecting, because, you know, I build worst case scenarios in my mind all the time. But we now have some bigger deals that need to get onboarded in the next week or two. We don't have the capacity on the customer care side. So, you know, the sales team who went from onboarding a tutoring company with like 20 instructors now needs to onboard a tutoring company with over 100 instructors. So the thing that's keeping me up tonight is like the fact that if we don't have a successful launch, it puts the future. If we have a successful launch, it sets us up for long-time success and long-time value with our partner. If we do not have a successful launch, not only does that long-term success and value possibly completely disappear, we then need to mitigate it throughout the school year and do everything we can to get that bad taste in their mouth out. And too often in education, if something goes off very rough in the beginning, people kind of say, hey, this tool sucks. It doesn't even work. It doesn't do what it needs to do. Like, I'm not going to lean in and try to use it anymore because it didn't do what I needed at one time. So the importance of having successful launches is super critical, not to the immediate aspect of the company, but drastically to the long-term value and proposition of our company.
Yeah. And that's well said. And I think this is where we're going to talk about the the difference between stabilizing the current process versus scaling the process. Because as you start to compartmentalize what you just said, the real problem is the stability and the real learning and cementing of the current process, onboarding and implementing. And not to say the other problem will disappear, but in terms of what we're going to advise on, you know, increasing communication, being able to manage multiple things simultaneously, the first piece of advisement is saying the real problem then that we want to focus on, at least today, is how do you feel comfortable that the quality level of your current process is going to meet your customer demand and the experience is at the quality level you want to sell? Because if you can sort that out first, then the scaling is more of a mechanical understanding of replicating that success. But if you're trying to do both, or you're conflating those problems, that's where you're going to start to get bogged down and it will become very overwhelming. Because then, like you said, you've got multiple balls in the air with an unknown form, and then you're going to just be caught in that vortex forever. So yeah. I would advise, even up front, like having a bit of compartmentalization of those dimensions, because otherwise it's going to be very hard to grasp even the thing that you need to get under control. Sorry, and Jonathan, I'll pass it over to you.
No, I mean, I was going down similar lines. That's why it's also, when you start from a place of their distinct departments, sales and customer care, as opposed to there being like everyone's wearing all hats before you know what the process, you know, truly is, you're creating this container that has to, you know, add to some amount of waste in your process, as you find. So like the handoff process ideally wouldn't exist so much at this stage in, you know, before you know exactly what fully is sales, because sales obviously doesn't include selling something that then takes an equal amount of time to absorb from the team. Does the sales team get incentivized distinctly from the rest of the teams?
So the sales team does have commission to their deals. So, but that commission is also dependent on the checks coming, and we have some groups pay up front, others halfway through the year, others quarterly through the year. So in the past, there was some friction when sales would sell someone, hand them off to customer care, and then they wouldn't have a successful onboarding because sales may have said the system does one or two things that doesn't actually do. Classic sales thing. This past year, it was one of our mandates to like not promise what we don't have unless it's a situation where like we are actively building it and they're actively paying for it. But I also, I mean, fundamentally, I agree. I think putting up boundaries by departmentalizing businesses at a company of our size isn't the smartest decision. Because it then, especially if you bring in folks from more traditional companies, that's when they're like, no, I'm in the sales department. Why am I doing customer care? And it's like, well, because we're all janitors here. Like we all need to do it. Well, and luckily the team hasn't had that perspective, but it does create unnecessary waste, I think, as you put it.
But Sam's point is very critical. The idea of not knowing, like you don't know exactly what fully is the end-to-end of customer care or of sales. So like it's hard to have a department for something that you're still building on some level. Like obviously you can deliver it and deliver it well, but the more the incentives for everyone are the same at this stage, it's just tough because obviously without sales, you know, that's number one. And that's why, you know, sales tend to get a different incentive structure.
Yep.
But I would suggest looking at that just a little bit, or at least including the incentive to, you had said include receipts, but maybe also include activity relating to customer care.
Yep.
Because obviously the more sales knows customer care, and if that's your biggest barrier right now, the better. So people ultimately will do what they're incentivized to do.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I will say that's why we have a healthy commission structure in place for our sales team, because they're salespeople. They're, you know, yes, we're all in it for education. Salespeople also tend to be in it to get a big paycheck. You know, that's a lot of how they're wired. And unfortunately for the position we're in as a startup, you know, we're still not at the place where we can give market rate based salaries.
Right.
So to get the talent that we needed on the sales side, and to get them motivated to go and close these deals, we had to give them commission, because in the past we had a few salespeople who weren't on commission, and it just didn't really get them going.
It's a classic problem, but just I would suggest that the commission that shying less toward that, especially when sales isn't your number one problem right now, and more toward incentives that are more aligned. The worst thing you could do is have friction, you know, at such an early stage. You don't have the time for that. So
I'd agree with that.
Once processes are stabilized, you know, I think we would still recommend, like, we still give alternatives to commission-based selling, but at least then it's much clearer where things fit in.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely open to hear suggestions opposite the commission that still keep the same motivation for our sales team. Definitely open to hear those. Yeah. But Sam, I'd also say one of the things you mentioned earlier, which I really do agree with, we have an immediate problem in front of us and then a longer term problem. Compartmentalizing and prioritizing the long term problem today doesn't make sense because we don't even know what the solution is. And ideally, we should learn more about the solution from solving the short term problem, which is a better way to do onboarding, again, people up to speed quicker. So I definitely agree with, you know, what's the immediate problem in front of us versus what one can we maybe wait 20 or 30 days, just really lean in and start solving.
Right. And this, I'll comment to that, that kind of ties the sales and commission problem together with what you're talking about. And this is where we articulate this as conscious business practice, and conscious being more like having a present mindset, because the more you forecast into the future, like you're saying, the more it becomes infinitely complicated. So if you collapse what you're struggling with right now, you've got a hyperactive sales team that's sort of selling ahead of current process stabilization. And this is a present problem. So in one sense, you can say, let's fix our sight on the present process to make sure that it's solid. And that's easy. But that doesn't fix immediately this pressure, this like crippling pressure of sales is doing a great job. There's all this client stuff coming in. And the real problem on that side that we have to manage in the present is that there's a mismatch of expectations of what's being sold, of communication, of transparency versus what can actually be provided. So this is something that when you talk about addressing it in the present, what that looks like is it's not saying let's change the whole commission structure. It could be, but it could also be that how do I reconcile what I'm selling right now with what my present state capability is? Because a lot of companies get in trouble by trying to sell capability that they keep thinking they're going to have in the future. And that is a game you can never win. So when you sit your sales team down today, you can either slow them down by kind of reducing their actual time at the sales as one, like, just to show like a very mechanical lever. But what I normally recommend in this situation is we need to get more honest and we need to get the sales more present, which is saying if I'm now dealing with new customers, they need to know that they're joining a pilot or that there might be a discount involved because it's going to be a delay, or like you've got to be able to match expectations with your actual capability in this moment. Because if you're always trying to sell and match capability with capability you don't have because it's either coming or you're planning on it, that's where this tension that you're feeling in the operating model is just going to continue to grow. So it's got to give somewhere. And our recommendation is always make the problem a present problem, because then the universe becomes more known. And then you may say, well, this is not jiving with how I think about our future going. But just like you said, your success was coming from pivoting and reacting in the present moment to what's going on in the market and what's going on. It's the same now with your explosive growth. It's like, I have to be honest with clients and say, like, we want to work with you, but this is where we're at right now. And that means you might have more people walk away, but that's going to also help moderate what's coming in based on your current maturity. So I know there's a few things I was trying to pack in there. I'll let you, does that make sense what I'm trying to articulate?
Yes. So it makes sense. And what I'll also say here is that the sales team has kind of been mandated to be like, hey, no one's onboarding any, no new people are onboarding in the month of September. Earliest we can really start to do is middle of October, but the sales team for the most, and we know, you know, educational institutions don't onboard in October. So the sales team does have full permission and they have started to do a very good job of positioning folks for more of that December and January launch. And one of the things the sales team kind of uncovered in it is that in the past, we may sell someone who was missing one thing, who we know they didn't ask for that one thing, but it's like, hey, it's still nine times better than what they were just using, so they'll be fine with it. One of the things the sales team has started to do, which is definitely helping a lot, is that one thing, they're like, hey, that one thing is going to be built in the next 2 months. Why don't you onboard in month 3 when that's already built, but let's still get to contract today? So the sales team has been able to push some of these groups out and say like, hey, let's still go to contract, you know, oh, you want this button to be green instead of red. If you sign with us today, we'll make it red or we'll make it green for you by the time you come on. So it wasn't the easiest transition to get them there. They are definitely starting to do a better job at it. But the one other contextual point I want to add here is that once a group is onboarded and up and running, it is very easy to manage that relationship. The amount of time, energy, and effort it takes for us to keep that client successful and keep that client growing is significantly less than those first 4 weeks where we do configuration, like partnership overview, administrative instructor trainings, and then the students actually coming on board.
Yeah. And
and that's based on what was your sample size? Like you said that this was your first, this your first year of this cycle. So that's based on like how broad is the sample set?
So this is the first year of the cycle at like the magnitude that we're at today. So we had two of those, three technically of what we would consider enterprise deals on the platform last year. And all of those deals showed similar patterns of like, you know, a lot of time, energy, and effort to get them up and running in month one. You know, for the next two or three months, we still do weekly check-ins and then we go to every other week check-ins. And that has been somewhat of a pattern. And even when we were working with more of the SMBs, which is like, you know, 10 instructors to like 40 instructors, we noticed that to be true as well, which is why, though, you know, what's keeping me up at night? If we do a successful implementation, the resources that relationship requires from Pearl moving forward is unsurmountably smaller than if we fumble implementation and need to focus on retraining habits once they're up and running.
Yeah. And I was going to say that this is the perfect segue into what would be now becoming a tactical conversation about stabilizing that process, because I think that is, from listening to you, your most critical problem right now. And I would offer some general insight, because when you evolve from that SMB concept, you've evolved now into what I just call the general complex SaaS implementation process, like as a general process. And what that means is, like you said, the configuration and the implementation is everything. And this is now you've entered the space that companies the world over are struggling with massively at any scale and any size. So like, I'm saying that because I want you to know that this is not something you should expect to figure out overnight by just throwing some customer care people at it. Like, this needs a lot of diligence and a lot of focus to understand this piece, because everyone is basically eating dirt trying to do any SaaS work right now on the market broadly, because it's very complex to understand a particular enterprise client's operating reality and then translate that effectively to requirements and then nimbly translate those requirements into your system and then integrate it into their IT stack or their architecture. So that takes like a number of skill sets, both consultative and technical. And it's something that, you know, you should, and I think, focus on stabilizing that. But part of that is, so you do it right, is you cannot underestimate the complexity of what this business has now become in that particular process area.
Yep. And I mean, all of that's resonating a lot. And you know, it's the dual-edged sword, I guess, of enterprise deals. They are absolutely massive, but they're incredibly difficult to get off the ground, like a rocket ship using 80% of its fuel in the first like 10 yards or something. So totally agree with you there.
That's what I meant about the sample size. Not that, of course, the drop down in effort, you know, after the initial engagement, but it's more learning that line of customization or configuration or distinct needs, or making assumptions as to what those needs will be based on too small a sample set.
Yep.
So that's, you know, I'm going to strongly echo what Sam just said about realizing that you might think you know a lot, and you do, but you have to be open to the fact that this is still in a very learning stage. So the more that you could be in either pilot or very transparent with the client about, you know, it's an early stage, and you can, you know, that means we're going to give you certain things that we might not otherwise, or whatever incentives you can give, the better. Because I think you're, I feel the energy of you're very, you've done so many things correctly, obviously, and had such good results, but there almost is like, there becomes a sense of like, okay, and I got to lock this down and lock this down. I build this, et cetera. But it's harder, but it's necessary to be open to being in a stage where you don't know everything, or there's still going to be time to learn it, and just make sure you're managing that process of being open to it, as opposed to keep looking to lock this down and be done, because then that's a lot of work you have to undo. Oh,
yep. I completely agree with you there. And it's funny because this kind of plays into the enterprise side. You know, one of the interesting things about selling enterprise is the person buying it probably isn't the person using it. They're a decision maker in the technology department that needs to buy something, and all they care about is integrations. They're not thinking about the end user experience. So our product leader, Chris, he has a term, you know, what are the unknown unknowns? And it's what we're talking about here. It's like there's things we know that we don't know. And then there's things we don't even know that we don't know it because we haven't even crossed that bridge yet. So the unknown unknowns is something that probably keeps Chris up at night a little bit more than some of the rest of us. Because, you know, on the product side, it's like, oh, this looks amazing. It works. And then the tutor will show up and be like, I can't do the super simple thing that is literally one of my main things to do. But whoever bought this didn't think about doing that. Yeah. So they definitely go hand in hand there.
Well, the good news is the people, Sam, I'll just make one more comment. The good news is that the people that make those decisions are generally more understanding of the noise that you feel is so loud because you're dealing with it every day at the ground level. And they're more mature in terms of being able to look at it, you know, from a more holistic view of, yes, okay, we had some bumps, et cetera. So it, unfortunately, because you're dealing with the people you're trying to serve, you know, all the time, and the people that matter on the ground level. But that noise becomes so loud that you sometimes don't realize, you know, you lose sight of the decision maker and what they're going to tolerate and what you could be communicating, well, to all of the constituents here.
Yeah.
Sam, and sorry, you were going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're trying to, we have a lot of passion around this particular topic that we have our finger on right now. So we're like, we're fighting to get as many points in as possible in our session. But the thing that Jonathan, and I'm just reemphasizing and add a little more to it, is the process actually starts when you start talking to those people on the ground. And like you mentioned, sales is happening at a value prop level, and yep, sales can happen completely divorced from the actual process that you're trying to, that we've now, I think, effectively put our finger on, which is the heart of your problem, which is, it is your entire scalability, your entire sustainability, the success you have as a SaaS company at this level of the game is in that configuration, is in that implementation period. That's everything. And like, hopefully you can feel that now that we're putting our finger on it more closely, because you want, it's the part that nobody wants to, yep, as a growing SaaS company, as a scaling successful SaaS company. It's also the same process that nobody wants to deal with, and they want to ignore because they want to just get through it so they can, like you said, get stood up on the lower maintenance side, and you can say, oh, well, I can take a lot more clients once I get everyone through that hump. But that hump is the company. And I'll just say that directly, because if you can't navigate that, yep, then you're going to be riddled with problems and you'll start rotting forever and you have nothing scalable. And the issue is, it's adding, this whole conversation is adding to the complexity of, you actually start that process after the sale. Nothing the sale usually has to do with the problems you're going to run into in that process until you start talking with the people who sometimes haven't even been told that the change is happening or what the change is going to be. And it's right in that moment, you have about 6 weeks to get really good at structuring a very intense project, working through change management with stakeholders that may not have even necessarily been part of the conversation, being very technically accurate on gathering requirements, and then also making sure that you're kind of standing it up, all with a high degree of efficacy and scalability. And like, you could take all your focus in the company right now and just maintain, like basically put everything on the back burner and control all the other moving pieces. And if you could compartmentalize that one piece and really hone in on what's the right skills, who are the right people, how do we really kind of get a standard process for that piece? That's going to become the beating heart of your business as long as it remains in this enterprise SaaS configuration. And hopefully that will help kind of give you some clarity about what, yeah, you need to look at there.
Yeah. What's priority number one? And I definitely agree. Coming into this, you know, there are definitely a few other things rattling around my head that have been taking a lot of time and energy. And I always look at it just, at the end of the week, I look at my calendar and just see what took up most of my time. And if it's not the number one priority for me, then I did a bad time I did a bad job managing my time for that week. I can say making sure these immediate implementations go off are not the main thing consuming my calendar time right now. But out of everything, out of every moving piece in the company, the most impactful ones for the immediate and long-term success of Pearl is setting our partners up for a lifetime of success, not just closing the deal, saying, figure out the platform and trying to go get that next one closed.
But one of the ways that that happens is what you're learning from this process. So the feedback loop, because you're navigating the line of, you're saying configuration, and that's great because you're not saying customization. So configuration, you know, like definitely the right approach, but understanding what configuration and what level of effort results in what costs to you and price point. That's the loop right now that defines whether or not you can make that jump to the next, you know, next level. And so that's why we're so strong on this idea of appreciating where you are and not understanding what you don't know and being more open to waiting to lock things down till you have a little bit more information so that you understand, okay, at 5, 10, you know, of these, I have that line of what the salespeople need to know, not just, you know, about the product, because people are always going to, or say, anyone is always going to talk about like what might be coming down the road, and hopefully it lines to what actually comes, you know, what the product roadmap actually can deliver. Although, again, as Sam's saying, we you don't want to get caught in that cycle, but there's some element of that. But understanding exactly what the impact to your cost is and what you could scope out and what different options for scoping out how you onboard and what you can deliver, that's the loop that you want your salespeople to really understand the limits of. So I'll pause there, because that if you could absorb that now and have a critical mass of input coming to you from the customers that you're onboarding and going through that process, any waste that happens now, if you had too many people, you know, in this group or that group for a period of time, it's worth it. But if you don't, you'll just set yourself up for more of these cycles of never having the right look balance and all of that.
Yep. Yeah. So one of the interesting things, one of the first things we did here was our COO created a job description pretty much of what this role would be and used that to kind of help get the team internally like locked on, like, okay, these are my responsibilities when it comes to onboarding and implementation. I do agree that, you know, we can definitely do a better job in the handoff between sales and customer care. And we've started to explore that. Is it like, do we have a customer care person attend the final walkthrough of the platform where it's like, this is exactly how you're going to be using the tool so that, you know, we can start to build that relationship, kind of decrease the friction and communication there. But one, like, I don't necessarily agree that the main problem we need to solve, and I don't know if this is what you're saying, so I'll repeat it back. The main problem we need to solve is on the sales side. In my opinion, it's much more about how do we improve this process and then build that capacity.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think you need to do a better job of anything. You're doing a great job of everything. Salespeople are doing a great job. Everyone's doing a great job. Like, really, the way you're explaining things, the decisions you're making, these are good. Like, so we're not, please don't take my comments that I think there's a problem with sales or the salespeople or anything like that. I wouldn't even say you need to do a better job of the handoff or something like that. I think what we're suggesting is you just don't know fully yet.
Yep.
And so it's just a different approach, because there's a difference between looking at something and saying, this is my customer care, this is the boundaries, this is sales, this is the boundaries, and I have to improve it or tweak it, as opposed to, this is what I'm setting for right now, and we're iterating until we have a certain critical mass of information to make certain decisions on, okay, absolutely, we can never configure more than X. Absolutely, you know, if they want 5 red buttons, you know, then this is our problem. So what I'm saying is, you have to be open to that information, and it's actually to look at it the opposite way. The opposite way is, we're doing a great job. This is great. But we just don't know exactly what we'll need from this job or role or that role in the future. So we're iterating, and we all need to be aligned on the information coming in and how we're going to apply it to keep iterating to what we need to be.
Yeah. And then let me just sneak in a comment there.
So, Sam, go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to sneak in one point on that because, you know, to summarize, I think in a different way, what Jonathan is saying, which I think is super critical, a salesperson, when you're selling a SaaS product plus configuration, the configuration part of the actual product can be very loose. And like, that's where you can get into trouble. So like, I think what Jonathan is suggesting is when you start to iterate your process about what your limits of configuration are in a scalable and profitable manner, that has to be translated very clearly into the product catalog that the salespeople are holding. Otherwise, that's going to be a runaway train that you'll never get synced up, I think is the real the real point. Because the thing is, it's like that has to be a conversation with both teams on a constant basis. And it's really critical in this stage. Because if a salesperson says, you can get the system and the world and we'll give you anything you want because our system is flexible, you guys are just going to get crushed in customer care over and over and over. And like the only way to mitigate that is the customer care team and whatever combination of expertise is there working with iterating the configuration and the implementation process has to articulate with clear boundaries what is the limit of what the salesperson can do. Exactly. And then they have to understand and be able to articulate that to clients. Because if you can't get that under control, you're cooked.
It's not a customer care issue. It's a product definition issue.
Yes.
You know, or a pricing or scope or, you know, however, but or knowing your service. So
philosophically, we're very much on the same page here. Like there's a lot of unknown unknowns in our onboarding process to try to, you know, lock it in stone today doesn't make sense, but it's going to be more of an iteration. Like we always say, we're an education company. If we're not learning, why would we expect anyone else on our platform to? So philosophically, we're on the same page. Tactically now, like, cause I, you know, love talk philosophy, but also want to be like, all right, how do we start to solve this problem? One of the things that has come to mind is like when, because we have a lot of onboardings happening in the next like month. So if we don't do something tactically in this next month, we miss an amazing opportunity for these feedback loops to improve it going into like the winter time. Right now in our onboarding process and internal onboarding process, we don't have a like post-mortem of an onboarding. It's like we get them onboarded, we keep supporting them. Like there's not a formal, like, hey, let's get the salesperson who sold it, the customer care person who onboarded it, our ops guy all in a meeting and be like, hey, how did this onboarding go? Cause that would then also present the opportunity for that communication between sales and customer care to say like, hey, you know, onboarding went to shit because they thought the platform was going to fly and our platform doesn't fly. We all know that. I mean, not the best example, but you get what I'm saying there.
Yeah,
so like, would that be a tactical thing we can now do from this more higher arching approach to try to solve this immediate time we have?
Yes.
And also,
yes, for sure. And this is where I'm going to try to squeeze in some high level on this whole problem. If I could squeeze it in, the way you want to think about it is after you sell. After you sell, it becomes the process becomes highly projectized. So like there's two distinct things you need to focus on. Like you said, there's a phase where, oh, it's lower, it's maintenance, it's ongoing. That what we call an operating phase. So your entire sales cycle is you sell and then a project starts. And that project should be run as diligently as any other internal project with good project management. And that's where when you're saying a postmortem is part of a project. And like everything that you would learn in a classic, like, I need to structure the project with the client. We need to have a problem we need to address. We need to gather requirements. We need to analyze. We need to configure. We need to implement. And then we close and do a postmortem and like an implementation. You need to be in the mindset that that's your clear project and it's very standard. After that project, you then offer ongoing operating support. And that's a whole different team, just like it would be in an internal company, right? So my project's finished. Now I'm implementing into an ongoing operating state. And a lot of people in this space lose the technical focus on what this group of processes is all in a row after the contract signed. So, and I'm highlighting that for you to start structuring your thinking, because what you're actually optimizing here is how do I run this project better? How do I have better project management? And part of that project management is exactly what you're talking about, which is doing postmortems, closing and learning after each project. Focusing on sharing that knowledge with the team. How do we run this project better? How do we improve our project methodology for this particular thing as an ongoing basis? And that's completely separate than the operating, maintenance, customer service. I mean, if you start having that process outlook, then you start seeing how the pieces, it's not as foreign, right? It's not this just big amorphous thing that we've got to onboard and we've got to implement. It's how do I do execute good configuration projects with the client? How do I consume that learning and become better at that engine? And it's separate from then transitioning it into an operating and an implemented state. And if you look at both processes that way, it will bring a lot of clarity and a lot more insight like you just had from a tactical perspective.
And the only thing I would add to that post-mortem process that we're talking about right now is the customer. So that's a very, very critical piece to have them as part of that debrief. Because a lot of times once we have the sale, we're, and especially if it goes smoothly onboarding, we make assumptions as to what was good for them and what was bad, but we don't actually get the learning. And so having them as part of that process, definitely, and making that part of always what you're doing anyway, will take it also out of just the tactical things you're fixing day to day and put it into understanding exactly this process we're talking about.
And after the contract signed, just generally, there's no you and them. You are the same company at that point, and that's how the project should be run.
Yep. Partnered. We doing it together.
So,
yeah, we'll let you reflect on the last advice comments. Comes down to, you know, validating a lot of what you've, a lot of what you're doing, but just assuring you that a big part of what the job right now is this validation or post-mortem process so that you get these lines right.
Yep.
You know, and the other tactical thing I think we were suggesting is bring the customer into that process a little bit about honestly where you are. So because they'll absorb more than you realize if you set them up for absorbing it. So even the maybe the customers that have been brought on before, you know, before you fully feel ready, you know, sometimes I would give it to them to make that choice. Say, this is what your experience is going to be like right now. You know, you tell me, I understand that the concern is that you're you have in your mind what the product should be and what their experience should be, et cetera. But don't underestimate their input. I know. And even they come back later and you said, we agreed to this, et cetera. But at least getting into that habit of not making it just your problem with your assumptions, tactically speaking, will have an impact on how you evolve.
Yeah. So, and, you know, bringing in the customer, not just up front, but also on the back end. I mean, from a point from earlier, it's not even just the customer anymore. It's the customer and the customer's user. So like not even just going to the person who bought and say, hey, 5 stars. Exactly. Awesome. We can say it's 5 stars. It's like, hey, give us 2 of your admins, 3 of your tutors and a student, if you possibly can, to see what their experience was like. Filter all that data back. Because once you get the game of telephone going, you never know what's actually going to make it to you. And if it does make it to you, you don't know if that's actually what was said or was an assumption made along the way that was then communicated as fact. And now, you know, we're talking about something completely else.
And I love the distinction between the two groups. But as you build up that interaction with the user group, these are also some of the people that you might find could be part of your seasonal support in the future. Like they might be excellent candidates to be ramped up just for a couple of months each year, you know, especially if they're excited about the process. They self-select through this process. You see the people that are very vocal, but also the people that are vocal with a willingness to improve, as opposed to the people that are vocal and just, you know, don't like change, you know. So it's just by having that interaction, you also start solving other problems potentially.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
So, John, I know we'll...
Sam, maybe, you know,
Yeah, we'll take a pause, and I know we've been throwing a lot at you. So before we let you go to process, do you have any other comments or burning questions before we kind of start to wrap up here?
I mean, the main thing that's rattling around in my head right now is what's the structure we can bring in to help the team naturally make this an iterative process? Because, you know, we always talk about learning and kind of, you know, doing better the next time, but we don't have any formal structure in place. So one, I think bringing that structure to this will just make it easier for us to figure out what's the correct way to actually do this. And then that's when we can build the onboarding, like the true scalable onboarding and implementation support, as opposed to trying to put it together now, hiring a ton of people, and then realizing we just missed the mark with it. So from this conversation, you know, that's definitely one of the main things that we haven't been doing that I think is just a very easily tactical thing to pull away. And then I think more holistically, it's how do we also let sales better understand the capacity of customer care, which was something we just didn't do too well over the summer. And ideally, if we take this iterative process, you know, customer care will say, hey, I think we can onboard 6 companies this January. If we take this postmortem kind of across the board, then we can also look at it and be like, hey, what would need to be true in order for you to onboard 8 companies in 1 month next year or this time next year? So I think those themes kind of play across a lot of different things going on in the business.
Yeah, I think that's really well said.
So we're coming to the end here. So I know you asked, like, another question there. I wouldn't worry so much about the structure of bringing them together, although there's a lot we can recommend, but it's just the objective. So the more everybody is very transparent about where the company is right now and what the challenges are, you know, and then just bring people to talk about it, you know, that's the key. But it's not even just saying, here's a structure for us to do a postmortem. It's broader than that. It's here's where we are, as you know, and these are the challenges we're facing overall. So you're not even defining exactly why, you know, what the goal is for that particular conversation, but it's here are the challenges and can we all give input? And then you can drive it to the specific of the postmortem, but you want everyone to start thinking about it as a common problem.
Yep.
Not even for a specific meeting, but it's this is an ongoing, like, this is how we need to evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, no matter what the case is, keeping that in the back of the head of how do we improve this?
Yeah. And I'll add, in your last question/comment, you've got this idea of postmortem on this. What is this? It's the most nefarious problem that you have to struggle with. And that's going to be my last bit of tactical advice. What I kind of explained, like, there's a project life cycle and then configuration has to end at some point and followed by an operating and a maintenance and a customer service life cycle. Yep. Defining the line there and defining what the bounds of the project are and what this is going to be the most tactical thing you can do, because it's so crazy how everyone on your team, if you ask them right now, and you said, let's do a postmortem on this part of the process, they don't know what this part of the process is, and they would all give you a different answer. What are the bookends? If you as a leader can define those bookends, and everyone can get standard on the taxonomy of configuration starts here at contract signing or whatever the first milestone, and it officially ends here, then a postmortem is possible. Then project improvement, like improving that process, is possible. But without definition, without delineation on what that phase is and everyone being aligned with that, iteration is impossible, because it will always be different scopes, and then you're not comparing the same thing every time. So, like, you are reflecting the wisdom I think you need to move forward with, but don't underestimate, is my last piece of advice, on the getting really clear on what this is. Because even though you're doing it every day and everyone's doing it, it's a very big challenge for startups, especially that are evolving quickly, to get really clear process definition.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm notorious for being like, yeah, you know, that thing. And super clear in my head, and the rest of the team's like, there's a billion things going on, John. Which one are we talking about? So, yeah, I'll definitely take that piece of advice.
Yeah. So with that, I guess our last question for you, John, is how are you feeling right now? Have we helped you clarify some things or ease some of your tension? How are you feeling overall?
Yeah. I mean, the anxiety is definitely coming down a bit. You know, there's a billion other things going on that are also jacking that up right now. But the biggest thing is, like, clear focus on what's the actual problem we need to solve today. You know, we're not trying to solve the how to create a scalable system today. What we're trying to solve today is how do we better help the team fully understand capacity of different parts of the team? How do we kind of, you know, not draw as many boundaries out of the gate? And then at the end of the day, what we're learning, we're in learning mode right now. So let's put our best shot together. Let's get these groups onboarded. Let's be very communicative around the business of, like, what actually works and what doesn't work. And let's just iterate and get better every day. Coming into this, I was trying to solve more of that long-term vision. I think this one, which the long-term vision, Jonathan, I think you said it, trying to solve something out, you know, a year from now when we don't even know half the unknowns, is a very complex problem to solve. So staying more focused on what we can do today, I think, makes a lot of sense. And is a little easier to digest than trying to figure out this whole massive scaling issue.
Well said. Yeah, and I think that's exactly what we would hope to impart, which is, you know, stay present and the problem becomes more manageable as a general principle. Well, with that, we really want to thank you, John, for coming on the show and having a very honest conversation with us. It's fascinating hearing about you and your business, and we were glad that we could, you know, you allowed us to offer some perspective. From here, I'd say keep in touch, and if you or anyone you know would love to come on the show or we'd love to see you again, let's just keep communicating, and other than that, everyone keep listening and letting us know your thoughts, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much.